Turn, if you will, please, tonight to Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7 and Proverbs chapter 8 is our text passage this evening. We are, of course, working our way through the book of Proverbs, not verse by verse by any stretch of the imagination, not in great academic detail, but we are trying to survey it and get to some understanding of it. And so we're moving along at a fairly good clip to this point. We'll probably slow down a little bit when we get into chapter 10. Let's stand, please. And again, and I'll explain why this is, but we're going to work through chapter 8 kind of piece by piece, but I want to begin by reading Proverbs chapter 7. My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister. Call understanding thy kinswoman, that they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him, kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. For the goodman is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. For she hath cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. Let's stop there. We'll pray. And we'll go on. Father, give to us an appetite for wisdom. If we have one, to whatever extent we do have one, it will come only from you. Work this grace in us, please. In Jesus' name, amen. And you may, of course, be seated. Well, I hope by now we understand that the first nine chapters of Proverbs form a cohesive unit in which the goal is to get us to see the value of wisdom, that it is something worth pursuing. I confess to you, this has posed a little bit of a preaching challenge to me, because week after week now, for 6 or 7 or 8 weeks or 9 weeks, whatever it will be, I come to you on Sunday night with basically the same theme. Wisdom is worth pursuing. It is worth thinking about. It is worth studying for. It is worth living for. It is worth pursuit of. Go after wisdom. And if you would say to me, you know, all these sermons seem to be about the same thing, I would say to you, the vast majority of the first nine chapters of Proverbs are about the same thing. Now, in the course of doing that, Solomon has revealed to us that there are basically four types of people in his lens. There are those who are the simple, the uninstructed, the young, the uninitiated, the naive. There are those who are fools. Those who have advanced beyond the simple in their knowledge, but are making a series of wrong decisions. There are the scorners or the mockers. And almost invariably, Solomon views these people as beyond redemption and beyond hope. That they have crossed that line in which God goes, there's nothing for you but judgment. And then the fourth is the wise man. He is a man of understanding, discernment, prudence, but there's only one category, and those who are wise are advancing in wisdom, but there's no other way to view them. So four categories: the simple, the fool, the wise, the scorner. And Solomon recognizes those categories, if you will, of people, and he recognizes something further, that there is a constant pull on all people, not just internally, which he acknowledges, but externally. And the pull of the world is to embrace folly. The pull of the world, the lure of the world, is to celebrate folly, to give oneself to it. And Solomon sees this as a great peril, and he finds that God is appealing to people to depart from the way of folly and follow the way of wisdom. Now, all of that unfolds within the context of a dad talking to his teenage son. This is a book from a dad, King Solomon, to his son, most likely King Rehoboam. Obviously, it extends to all people. We are dealing with it as applicable for us. But the immediate situation of the writing is that Dad Solomon is writing to son Rehoboam. A man, by the way, who yields to the lure of folly and not to the appeal of wisdom. The wisest man in the world did not succeed in creating an appetite for wisdom in his own son. Proverbs is, of course, a book of Hebrew poetry, a particular type of Hebrew poetry, most simplistically called parallelism, in which one thought is contrasted to another or one thought amplifies another. Now just back up for a second and think about this, and think about the wisdom of God and the wisdom of Solomon. Solomon is trying to deal with a rather sophisticated, abstract context. Son, you need to be wise. Now the reality is, folks, and I mean no insult to teenagers, but the reality is that most teenagers do not sit around and contemplate lofty philosophical thoughts. That's just not where their minds are. That's not where the minds of our teenagers are for the most part, and that's not where the mind of Rehoboam was. He wasn't given over to the deep intellectual pursuits of philosophy and literature and wisdom. So what's a dad to do? How do you take something that is relatively abstract, wisdom, and make it appealing to a teenage boy? You talk about it like it's a girl. Now, Solomon was not encumbered with all of the political correctness that saturates our world that would cause everybody to rise up in arms and gasp at the inappropriateness of it. Solomon just said, boy, going through life is like encountering pretty girls. They're appealing. Some pretty girls are dangerous. Some are not. And this is, I would suggest to you, one of the reasons that we have the writing that we have in front of us. If we were going to try to deal with this in a little more of an academic situation, which we're not, I would try to work through chapter 7 and lay it side by side with chapter 8 to point out to you that Solomon here is dealing with the concept of folly and wisdom in feminine form. That he admonishes his son about being sinfully seduced by a woman. Don't do that. Instead, allow yourself to be led by this woman. Wisdom. Let wisdom lead you. Wisdom is personified as a woman in chapter 8. Folly is given to us as a woman in chapter 7. The seductress and the wise woman. The seductress operates in chapter 7 in the dark. The wise woman does not. The seductress seeks to seduce the simple and corrupt him before he has an opportunity to grow and mature. The wise woman seeks to grab the simple and lift him to the heights of wisdom. The seductress clearly leads to death, Proverbs 7:27. The wise woman clearly leads to life, 8:35 and 36. Again, Solomon's not being coarse, he's not being vulgar. Solomon had no concept of the political correctness of our world. He's trying to get across to his son that life and death is at stake, and you need to think about this properly. So having just established chapter 7 as kind of the antithesis of wisdom, let's move to chapter 8. Let's begin by reading verses 1 through 10. Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of the high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Hear. For I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. Unlike the seductress, wisdom advertises publicly, openly, and in the light. We've all been recipients of telemarketers. We all know that the strategy is never to open by saying, I'm bothering you today to sell you something that you don't want. Instead, a total stranger says to you, how are you today? They do not get immediately to the point. They ask leading questions, but they are evasive. That is not the way wisdom is. It stands in a prominent place and declares her message, verse number 1. She stands in the most prominent of places, verses 2 and 3. You do not have to go looking for wisdom. Wisdom is looking for you. Her message is for everyone, verses 4 and 5, both the simple and the fool. And again, one of the reasons that the scorner or the mocker is not included is because Solomon pretty much deals with them as beyond hope. Once a person begins to make faces at God, Solomon sees them as pretty much beyond recovery. But there is hope for both the simple and the fool, and so the message is publicly proclaimed and directed at them. And when she speaks, she is confident of the excellency of her topic, verses 6 through 10. She is plain, direct, straightforward. The idea there in verse number 6, "Here for I will speak of excellent things," doesn't really mean the moral quality of excellent. It means the big things, the leading things. I'm going to talk to you about the important things. I'm going to talk to you about the things that really matter. The big stuff. And the things that I'm going to say to you have the moral quality of being right. They are upright. They are straight. They are unbended. They are equitable. They are right concerning God. They are right concerning man. They are right concerning you. They are right concerning everyone else. "I speak the truth," says wisdom, "and I despise the lie." I'm not trying to pull one over on you. I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to rob you. I'm not trying to deprive you. I am trying to help you. And all of my words are righteous. They are not twisted, which is what froward means. And they are not distorted, which is what perverse means. They are straight. There is no agenda. And they are far superior to silver and gold. Wisdom is superior to silver and gold. Secondly, wisdom assures us that it is not making empty promises. That's verses 11 through 21. "For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the froward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign and princes decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the path of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasure." The assurance is that the promises wisdom makes are not empty, that you're not wasting your time in the pursuit of wisdom. Solomon's very clear that to pursue the sensual pleasures of the seductress leads to death. As God said of Moses in the book of Hebrews, he chose not the pleasures of sin for a season. The Bible never says sin is not fun. The Bible always says the fun of sin is seasonal and righteousness is eternal. Let me ask you, if you would please, just to look at verse 11, and I want to pause there. Solomon concluded, I argue, his first section with verse number 10. "Receive my instruction and not silver, knowledge rather than choice gold." Why that, Solomon? "For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it." In the last 168 hours, how much time do you suppose you have spent? How much time have I spent thinking about money? How to get money, how to spend money, what to do with money, what I could do if I had more money, what I will not do because I do not have more money. In the last 168 hours, how much time have you spent, how much time have I spent thinking about wisdom? How can I get more wisdom? How can I add to my bank account of wisdom? When I think to myself, as I'm preparing one of these messages, that it is somewhat repetitious, I also think to myself that I am really not very far removed from being a teenage boy in my own mind. That I far more by default think about money than I do by default think about wisdom, and yet God has spoken very plainly that wisdom is better than all of the money you could have. That if you could choose but one, wisdom is the one to choose. That if you can work for one, wisdom is the one to labor to obtain. And when you get it in verses 12 through 14, you discover that you do not get just wisdom. That you get all that wisdom can provide. You can get prudence. Prudence is sometimes translated guile or wilily. When it's used in a negative context, it's used to describe somebody who is sneaky, who is trying to put one over on somebody. But when it's used in this sense, prudence, it is used to describe someone upon whom it is very hard to put something over. I've made the argument that Nehemiah was shrewd in the best possible use of the word. In the vernacular of our King James Bible, Nehemiah is prudent. He can figure out when somebody's up to something. He can assess the situation and see clearly what's happening. Why is this? Because he is a wise man. And in his wisdom, he obtains this. You get knowledge of witty inventions. You can read between the lines and figure out what people are up to. Now, this is not foolproof. We're sinful human beings. But when we're in the pursuit of wisdom, when we're letting God instruct us, when we're letting God define life and explain situations, we are much more inclined to be able to read between the lines, to understand what's going on. When you get wisdom, you will obtain the fear of the Lord. This will include hating evil, hating pride, hating arrogance, hating evil ways. When you get wisdom, you will find yourself surrounded with good advice, good counsel, real strength. Solomon goes on to explain in verses 14 through 16 that kings use it, princes use it, nobles use it, and so do judges. It's good company. And then he points out that it rewards those who seek it, verses 17 through 21. If you love wisdom, it will love you back. If you want it, you may find it. Wealth is simply a byproduct of it. God is not opposed to people being wealthy. He is opposed to people pursuing wealth for its own sake. If people are wise, he is more than happy to bestow wealth upon them. That's exactly what he said to Solomon when he appeared to him in a dream. What do you want? Ask what you want. Solomon says, I want to be a good king. God said, well, that's great. You can be a good king. You can also be a very rich king. Since you didn't ask for that, I'm more than happy to give it. Wealth is one of its byproducts. So is righteousness. And to have it is to exceed the value of the very best gold. Solomon goes on in verses 22 to 31 to point out, unlike the temporary pleasure promised by the seductress, wisdom is eternal in its nature. And folks, we discover as we live, you will discover as you live, and the younger you are, the more of this you have to your discover, that life is simply a system of choices. And very often those choices are what is right now and immediate and what is long term. We by nature tend to make right now immediate choices, almost always to our detriment. Let's read verses 22 through 31. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of His way, before His works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet He had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world, when He prepared the heavens, I was there. When He set a compass upon the face of the earth, when He established the clouds above, when He strengthened the fountains of the deep, when He gave to the sea His decree that the water should not pass His commandment, when He appointed the foundations of the earth, there I was by Him, as one brought up with Him. And I was daily His delight, rejoicing always before Him, rejoicing in the habitable part of His earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now, remember, folks, we're dealing, first of all, with Hebrew poetry. And we're personifying an attribute. And the point that I'm saying here is Solomon is giving, for the sake of illustration and sermon, an identity to wisdom that it doesn't really possess. There's not a fourth member of the Trinity. There's not the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, and the wise man. But Solomon here is, as he appeals to us to pursue wisdom, pointing out that it was an invaluable tool of God in creating the world. Almost as if, I'm not saying it was this way, but almost as if the way Solomon is presenting it, God comes to the decision that He's going to fabricate a universe. And what is the tool in the toolbox that He will use? Wisdom. He will bring all of His divine skill to the creation of the world. So that no matter how hard the wind blows and how high the waves are, they crash upon the shore and they recede to the sea. Why is that? Because God had built a world in His wisdom, not in His folly. In Proverbs 3:19, it is stated explicitly, the Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth, by understanding hath He established the heavens, and wisdom and God get along very well. That's verses 30 and 31. Then I was by Him as one brought up with Him, and I was daily His delight, rejoicing always before Him, rejoicing in the habitable part of His earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Unlike sin, unlike folly, God enjoys the company of wisdom. And so then at that point, in verses 31 or 32 through 36, wisdom appeals to you to choose it consciously and deliberately. It has stood in the public place and said, come to me. I'm telling you the truth. I have goods to give you, blessings to bestow upon you. Come to me. Verse 32. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, be wise, refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. Choose it consciously. Choose it deliberately. If you want wisdom, it is there for you to have. I said you do not need to go looking for it. It is looking for you. But you must still pursue it. Wisdom is not in hiding. It is available to all who have an appetite for it. Hear instruction. Do not refuse it. What is it to pursue wisdom? It is, quite honestly, folks, simply to listen to God. To listen to God and to do what He says. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Here are my options. I'm going to do A or B. What does God say? God says, do A, not B. Okay, I'm going to do A. It's not magic, folks. It's not an incantation. We don't obtain it by saying abracadabra and knowing the recipe. We get it by fearing the Lord. If you do this, you will find life and favor. But those that hate it demonstrate that they love death. So with that, let me make my appeal to you. I appeal to you that you consciously, willfully, deliberately choose to pursue wisdom, which means that you consciously, willfully, deliberately pursue obedience to the Lord in all things. And let's commit to pray for one another that we all do that. That this would be the characteristic that colors all of us. That we are a community of believers who are committed to living in biblical wisdom. So that when we interact with each other, when we converse with each other, when we problem solve with each other, when we brainstorm with each other, what is really driving us is the pursuit of godly wisdom. What does the Lord say? What would the Lord have? How would the Lord view this? And then, of course, we do this in faith, believing that God will honor that decision.